American Atheist gets together for their pre-show to discuss what they're going to talk about today. We always talk about the important things, you know, what's going on in society. And this morning, it was 80s Saturday morning cartoons, if I remember properly.
What else is there to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, what could be more important than those?
And the subsequent rap careers of some of them.
Right, yeah. I think what got this started was you wondered what happened to Fred Durst, and then somebody mentioned the MC Hammer Saturday morning cartoon where MC Hammer was a superhero. However, his pants did not give him the ability to fly, which I thought was weird. It's the way I would have done it.
He did have talking shoes, though.
He had, was it talk real talking? Yeah, he did. Oh, wow. Yes, I had blocked that.
He actually skated along on a musical, I believe it's a bar?
Yes.
Like a surfboard.
Yeah.
Or Iceman from the X-Men.
And that reminded me of, going back even farther, the Rubik's Cube Saturday morning cartoon, if you remember that one, where they basically just slapped a face on a Rubik's Cube and it solved crimes.
Well, yeah, that's what they did in the 1980s, is if they had an opportunity to turn a product, or sometimes just a product spokesperson,
yeah,
into a Saturday morning cartoon protagonist, they would.
Yeah, which led inexorably to you pulling up a YouTube video of one of your favorite morning cartoons.
Oh, the Super Mario Brothers Super Show?
Starring?
Oh, Captain Lou Albano as Mario.
So he played the end music where Lou Albano sings the Mario, or the lyrics to the Mario music, which... please look it up online. We're not singing it here. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Give us a call if you got one in ya. My name is Sam. With me, as usual, is Mike. How are ya?
Hey.
And joining us for the first time in front of the mic is Casey. How are you, Casey?
I'm awake.
This is a different Casey, not the other Casey, but you'll get used to it.
I'm the replicant.
Yeah, you're the replicant, right. I have the device set up and everything. So last time we met with here in the studio, we had a discussion about Peggy's Challenge.
Yes, as you may know, it costs money to keep us on the air. It costs money to keep us on the radio. And every time we've asked you guys to help us out, you've always come through in flying colors. But things are a little tight right now.
Yeah, have to admit. And we said that 2 weeks ago, and honestly... still tight. However, you guys came through in a big way, and we would like to thank locally Renee from East Sound, Washington, Jan from Grays Harbor, Washington, Peggy from Kent, again, thank you, Peggy, and Tim from Seattle. And then elsewhere in the United States, we have Peggy from Maryland, different Peggy, and Jason from West Babylon, New York. That's a place. That's a... And then from abroad, we have Vince from British Columbia, Bjorn from Hamburg, Germany, and Anik from the Netherlands. And Anik actually wrote us a nice message, which I'd like to read to you. Hey, Ask an Atheist crew, I've been listening to all the episodes in chronological order. I only heard about Peggy's Challenge just a week or so ago, and since it sounds like money is tight right now, what better time to contribute to the show that I download first thing in the morning on Monday so I can listen to it at work? You guys are thought-provoking, insightful, and funny, and it only feels natural to help out a little. After all, I hope to keep enjoying the show for some time longer, provided that the shape-shifting lizards don't destroy the world. I'd hold that against them just a little bit.
Just a little.
Just a little.
Thank you for the kind words, Anik.
Yes.
That's really sweet of you.
It really is. And so, yeah, if you'd like to help us out, you can go to askanatheist.tv and click on the yellow button, which will take you to the... take you to PayPal, or what we could also do is we also advertise on the show. So if you have a product you'd like to advertise and you'd like to help out the show at the same time, you can go to askanatheist.tv again and look at our advertising rates are quite economical.
I think we have the cheapest rates on radio.
So, oh boy, it's been a very interesting week. One thing that we should talk about is that there's an update on Malala Yousafzai. Which is great, and this comes to us from The Guardian. Malala Yousafzai has been released from Queen Elizabeth Hospital in the UK after a successful surgical operation on her ear and skull. In the procedure, she had a titanium plate and a cochlear implant fitted. Additionally, a fund, the Malala Fund, has now been established to help fight for educational access. So that's really good news. She's out, and she's actually talking.
And she was shot in the head for... coming out for educational access.
For so doing exactly this.
It's really amazing. I mean, you have, I believe they were Taliban-affiliated gunmen.
Yeah.
That the thing that terrifies them more than anything is a little girl with a book who can read and is educated and perhaps has the intellectual tools to look at the claims that she makes and realize them for the hateful garbage that they are.
Yeah. I guess I do have a little bit of a gripe at the atheism community about this, because Malala is starting to speak again. And one of the first things she said is that she thanked people for her prayers and talked about God and stuff like that. And that, as you might imagine, groused the atheism community a little bit. And I was like, why should that grouse us? She's not an atheist. She's an education activist. And she's not establishing a fund for religion. She's establishing a fund for childhood access to education.
I don't think it's reasonable at all to simply assume that just because we come out in favor of someone that we have this demand on the table that they adopt every single thing that we believe.
Yeah.
And I don't expect her to. I want her to be able to teach children and things like that in that area.
Yeah.
I don't demand that she be an atheist. Maybe she might be more open to those sorts of arguments now, but that's not the goal. The goal is not to force people through other people's violence to adopt our belief system.
Right.
I think this speaks to a topic we're going to get into later where, you know, atheists might have certain agendas that have nothing to do at all with atheism.
Right.
You know, education is an important thing and it should be allowed for everyone despite their religion.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, on the show, we tend to stick to politics only where it interacts with atheism. And to me, education is clearly one of those because it's access to information which allows for skepticism.
And there are people in that educational sphere that are our allies even if they don't adopt every single thing we believe.
Yeah.
Ken Miller is a great example of an evolutionary biologist who is a great education activist, a great opponent of creationism being taught in public schools as science. He's a Catholic. I don't agree with him on that. But 90% of the other stuff in that sphere, in the church and state sphere, I'm on board with. And I have no problem being in a coalition with somebody like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, I wasn't hearing a huge outcry, but I was seeing some in the social media, some bits and bobs here and there, and I thought it was worth talking about. I like, you know, it's really terrible what happened to Malala. It is. But the end result, I mean, she's getting the medical attention that she needs. She's out. She's talking. She seems to be doing well. And I guess to say there's a tiny silver lining on this huge cloud that there's this Malala fund for educational access, and the fact that a lot of people aren't getting the education they need to be skeptical is out there now.
But also the backlash against the Taliban.
That's true.
I mean, an international backlash.
Yeah.
That these guys say stuff like this on a daily basis about, you know, women aren't allowed to get education. We're going to burn down anything that isn't a part of our narrow, hateful ideology. But at the same time, when you actually see them act upon it and you see the physical repercussions of the things that they say, then people get it. And people go, yeah, you know what? I don't want to help these people. I don't want to aid these people. I don't want them in my country.
Yeah, that's true. There's been a huge backlash. So there's it sucks that a lot of these things, a lot of this social progress, basically has to be on a road paved in blood in many ways. But I mean, that is, I guess, the way of it. And if the end result of this is that children have better education, you know, Malala gets the attention that she needs, and the Taliban goes away. Okay, good side, bad side.
Yeah, that's a win. I don't want to have to get there this way every time.
Absolutely.
But if this has to happen, I'd like to have this outcome rather than the Taliban is more entrenched than ever.
Yeah. So I guess when one door opens, in a way, another door closes. And the Boy Scouts recently had tried to vote about a ban on homosexuals in the Boy Scouts. And after a year, the Boy Scouts of America reaffirmed their ban on openly gay scouts and scout leaders. The organization had floated a compromised way to address the ban after receiving growing criticism. This would mean allowing each troop to individually decide whether they would continue the ban or end it. That was the compromise, but over 70% of troops are sponsored by a religious organization, the largest of which is the Mormon Church, who blasted the decision. As a result, the national organization has postponed the decision until a national leadership meeting in May. There has been no talk of ending Boy Scouts' ban on atheist scouts or leaders.
I noticed that a lot of people on social media got really excited about this, and they should be, because it's a step forward. But it's not the same thing as ending the ban. This sounds a bit like the free state, slave state sort of compromise that we talked about right before the Civil War,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, okay, if you guys want to continue to own humans as farm equipment, you can over there, but we won't over here.
Right.
And then every time a new state comes in, there's that battle, and it seems like you'd have that exact same situation where every time there's a new troop that's formed, you have that immediate battle that's going to happen on a small scale 1,000 times rather than one big time. And it seems like that battle is going to end just like the Civil War, which is it's going to come to a head and they're going to have a big, nasty public spat over it.
Right.
Yeah, it is a step in the right direction, but I agree that it's probably just going to tear the Boy Scouts apart in a Civil War manner.
Okay. I'm okay with that, really.
Yeah.
I have an idea, though, and I floated this before, but I really want people to consider it. I think the Girl Scouts needs to start a boys' auxiliary of the Girl Scouts. I think we're all comfortable enough in our sexualities now to have that sort of thing go on.
And the Girl Scouts have been comfortable with that for a while. I think that once you just drop the girl preface, you know, prefix to the title and just be the Scouts, I could see them completely absorbing a lot of people that feel this way from, and just becoming the Scouts. And then the Boy Scouts of America becomes this sort of backward, socially, you know, abhorrent anachronism.
It really needs to become that. The Boy Scouts needs to go away. I mean, the concept of scouting doesn't, but the Boy Scouts of America, an organization that, that discriminates against atheists and discriminates against homosexuals and discriminates against a lot of people and is funded by people with a clear ideological bias, that is not what, you know, that is not positive and does nothing to help us. It just needs to go away. I you know, camping is nice. Outdoorsmanship is nice. Marksmanship, whatever. But we also can't teach hate.
No. And I think the fact that this is so heavily entrenched in these religious, typically conservative religious organizations is a big part of it, which is that troops that are sponsored, and like you said, 70% of these organizations are going to be sponsored by churches. The biggest one, of course, is the Mormons, who have a clear stance on gay rights that they've made clear, Prop 8. It's going to have this sort of backlash. And the New York Times article that on this had talked a bit about how it doesn't just that they sponsor them. It's that the practices of those organizations, those religious organizations, becomes a practice of that troop. Like a Catholic sponsored troop ending their meetings with the Lord's Prayer, or Mormon related prayers coming out for the Mormon affiliated troops. So if you're in that area and you're not a Mormon, you're not a Catholic, you might even be a straight theist the way they want you to be, but you're the wrong kind, you still feel excluded.
Absolutely. So we have a very interesting interview today. We're going to be talking with Troy Boyle of the National Atheist Party. But before we get into that, we need to disclose some things and talk a little bit first. If you, like we said before, on Ask an Atheist, we tend to stay away from politics that aren't specifically about atheism. You know, that's not to say that we don't have political opinions, but we want to keep the atheism thing about atheism. We want to talk to all atheists. We don't want to be an atheism show with a particular bent. So we've, for the most part, we've kept it out of the debate. However, with this next interview, we feel it necessary to disclose something specifically about Mike here. Mike, you have a political history. Why don't you tell us about it?
Before becoming an atheist activist, I spent about 5 years as a third-party political activist. I was an activist first for the Democratic Party, then the Green Party. But generally, I tend to lean towards third-party political organizations and was an organizer of them for 5 years. I have been the ballot access coordinator for more than one U.S. Senate campaign, local campaigns. In 2008, I was the state co-chair and ballot access coordinator for Washington State for Ralph Nader's political campaign. Mm-hmm. So I've got a lot of experience in third-party politics. I've got obviously well-formed opinions about metrics for success in those endeavors. So I would be lying if I said I didn't have a dog in the fight to some extent.
Right. And we feel, you know, Ask an Atheist as a group, we feel it's important to let people know that when we do interviews like this, that we disclose that stuff. I have not had the political activism history that Mike has. I can tell you that when we're not talking about atheism, we do talk about politics, and Mike and I don't agree on a lot of things. But for now, I'm content to let my political opinions stay in the shadows. The National Atheist Party is a new organization founded in 1911, and one of the reasons we have Casey with us today is you were interested in the National Atheist Party, and you've actually participated.
Yeah, I think they were founded in 2011, not 1911.
Did I say 1911?
I think it's the Boy Scouts or around that time.
Yeah, sorry.
at the Northwest Freethought conference this past year with Richard Dawkins, there was some literature passed around, and I'm on the other end of the spectrum from Mike. I know very little about politics, so I looked into it, and I considered becoming active in it, but I really don't have an informed enough opinion about politics to get my feet wet there yet. So I do follow them on Facebook, though, and I've been watching their progress.
What kind of stuff have you seen from them so far?
Mostly it's trying to garner support and money.
Okay.
But I haven't seen a whole lot. I mean, it's obvious they bowed out of the 2012 as far as...
We were talking about that, and I don't think that's necessarily a problem in that case. Because if they... Sorry. If they were formed in 2011, I kind of wonder, you know, what kind of access you would have in the 2012 election cycle. So,
yeah, if it was 1911, then they should all...
Oh, yeah. Why wasn't I at the...
I think that's ample lead time.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about the National Atheist Party with the head of the National Atheist Party.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
Alright, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules, a variation on our usual fantasy campaign system. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shape-shifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, as well as a listing of other products and to get involved in the community forums.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Joining us is Troy Boyle, the president of the National Atheist Party. He has a BA in law from American Military University, is currently in law school, and is also a comic book cover artist. How you doing today?
Hello. I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Doing very good. So first of all, tell us about the National Atheist Party. Give us sort of a history, how it got started, and where you guys are today.
Sure. Very briefly, I was listening to Richard Dawkins in an interview, I believe it was with Dateline, where he said he was surprised that in the United States, such a diverse land, open access to political parties and freedom of speech and all the other benefits of living in the United States, that there wasn't an attempt to organize politically by atheists. And when I heard that, I thought, well, then I'm going to do it. Honestly, it was a kind of a spur of the moment decision, and in February of 2011, I formed a political party. We called it the Free Thought Party.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't really get people together. There was a lot of arguments in the threads, and no one really knew what the party was supposed to be, and it fell apart very quickly. And so then I decided, rather than organize it from the top down, which is what I was trying to do, I would organize it from the bottom up. So we convened, you know, a lot of different people, a lot of different atheists together, and asked them what they wanted to see in a political party. We kind of put it together that way, and then I wrote the charter documents, and we held our first elections, and the party was officially formed March 11th of 2011.
Okay, so you've formed a political party, and it does have the dreaded A word in it. So, how successful has that rallying cry been? How many chapters have you guys formed?
We have chapters in all 50 states.
Oh, congratulations! That's a good sign. Can you give us a brief synopsis of the political platform of the party?
Sure, we have an 18 issue. Platform that's available online at www.usanap.org. And it covers the gamut of sort of typical political planks, abortion, gun control, the economy, energy, immigration.
So you know,
pretty much the standard sort of listing of political topics.
All right, so I guess one of the things that we say on the show a lot is that, you know, atheism doesn't necessarily have a stance on gun control or a stance on economic policy, and you guys clearly are looking to be a very complete political party. How are you building your 18-point platform when you talk about things like gun control and economic policy? Are you polling the organization? How is that being developed?
Well, it's kind of a two-sided coin. On the one hand, since we are, I think, a rational organization, a science-based, an evidence-based organization, we make sure that any stance that we take on any issue has validity, has scientific validity, has evidence to back it up. This is a best practice because. This is an effective measure because. And so we have that kind of data to back up each one of our planks, but at the same time, we offer the full gamut of responses to our membership, and then they vote on it, obviously. Yeah, we had a platform committee come together and ask people, what do you want the party to do? And then after establishing a poll on each individual plank that covered the gamut from ultra-conservative to ultra-liberal and every point in between, we then presented that to the membership and let the chips fall where they may. We were interested in learning what atheists really thought rather than imposing some kind of so predefined stance.
Very good.
And overwhelmingly, the response was kind of center-left.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious about that. Thing I've noticed in at least the atheist communities that I've been a part of is that we tend to be very socially liberal. But on questions of economics, we tend to be all over the board. That if you say, okay, name two political figures who didn't believe in God, that includes Karl Marx and Ayn Rand. So there's a lot of diversity there. And I don't think the diversity has gone away. Do you worry if taking a center-left platform, as you put it, can scare off people who are politically libertarian or economically conservative?
Well, if that's how they choose to respond, there's very little I can do about that. But what I would invite them to do is take part in the process. Because if the majority of our membership were to vote libertarian on an economic issue, then the party would adopt that as its stance. So by saying the party currently holds a particular platform position means I won't get involved, well, that just seems self-defeating, doesn't it?
Well, I can understand not wanting to get involved in an organization that takes views completely contrary to mine. I guess that's the concern, is that because of the diversity, does it make sense to form as an organization that takes stance on those issues at all, as opposed to a PAC that would just stick to the narrow issues on which the entire community can coalesce behind? Because it feels like we could lose a lot of that focus if we get into fights about something like, say, tax policy.
Well, sure, that's a danger. If we wanted to be a PAC, we'd be a PAC. We're a party. We have a consensus building democratic process on the issues. So, you know, the way I look at it, if 68%, 72%, you know, 86% of the membership wants to lean a certain way on an issue, we're going to go in that direction. You can campaign for a different direction, you can agitate for a different direction, but if that doesn't meet the level of consensus opinion of the party, then, you know, you're not going to get your way. Now, saying that, I still have to say, if you're a Republican atheist and you want to see a political party that represents your interests, then by all means form the Republican Atheist Party. Mm. Because as an open political atheist, you're not going to be represented in the Republican Party of today. You're not going to be represented in the Democratic Party of today. So because of that, in order to have any kind of political voice, you either have to, like you said, take part in a PAC or form a party or not play.
So you've decided to become a political party, and your website says you organize to promote and run candidates for public office. Have you run any candidates for public office yet?
Oh, no, not yet. Got to crawl before you walk, got to walk before you run. We're very young. I believe you mentioned the Green Party earlier. I believe it was 7 years from their formation till they elected their first candidate. So in a little over a year, I think we've done very well.
Well, aside from...
My guess is that we could probably support a school board, a county commissioner, a city councilman at this point right now. We don't have anyone who's thrown their hat in the ring, but we could probably support that level of candidacy today.
So are there any
national elections or presidential elections? That's going to be further down the road, obviously.
I can understand that, and I'm not expecting you to have feet on the ground for a presidential campaign just yet. But are you in the midst of recruiting, or do you have any leads on potential candidates for city council elections, for school board elections, for local offices?
Yes, we have some interested members who are talking about running a campaign. Yes.
That would be great to hear. Also, I'm curious on the question of ballot access as a former, not a candidate, but a former activist in third-party politics. It seems like half of the discussions you have are just about appearing on the ballot. Have you successfully petitioned anywhere to appear as candidates on the ballot in any states?
No, not yet. We've developed a database of what's necessary in each state. Some of them are very easy, some of them are quite hard. California is very hard, for instance.
Undoubtedly.
I'll stop you right there and say I have listened Mike talk literally until 4 in the morning about the difficulty of ballot access in California. It's a fascinating and ridiculously difficult subject, so I'm actually really glad that you brought that up.
Oh, yeah, it's draconian. At some point, you have to kind of let that part of the initial formation of the party percolate and wait until the money and the membership is there. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're organized as a 527 nonprofit political organization under the IRS regulatory authority. And the reason that we've done that is because we're not promoting any single candidate, but we are having a national focus on membership drive, issue advocacy, coming out in support of gay marriage laws, coming out in support of legislation that, you know, seeks to support science in the classroom and not destroy it, things of that nature. But it's a function of membership. It's a function of money. As we continue to grow, we'll become more and more effective.
So what kind of metrics for success do you want to have? Where do you want the party to be in 5 years?
Oh, gosh. You know, as long as we continue to see growth and we don't experience negative growth, I'm going to be happy. And we haven't had any negative growth so far. We've never had a month where there are, you know, there's more member attrition than there is member gains.
Okay.
So if you plotted, you know, you were talking about metrics earlier, if you plotted the growth of the party, it would be kind of a 45-degree, you know, from lower left to upper right kind of membership growth. And I think that's wonderful and it's very encouraging.
What is the standard of membership right now? I'm just actually curious. If one were to want to be a member of the National Atheist Party, I imagine they would go to your website. Is it usanap.org?
Exactly.
Yes. So they would go there, and then what's the process for becoming a member?
Click register, fill out your information, and click send.
Oh, okay.
You know, there's nothing, you know, it's very transparent. There's no membership dues currently.
All right.
We do obviously ask for donations. We're a nonprofit. I'm not a millionaire. I wish I was. It would make this a lot quicker. It would make it a lot easier.
So I can understand when you're in the formative, you know, times when you're just sort of when you're getting getting steam going, getting people together, trying to get money together, that talking about 5 years out can be kind of difficult. But what sort of plans do you have in the near term? I mean, we've got the 2014 elections coming up. What's the sort of expected participation for the National Atheist Party at this point?
Well, the first thing we're going to do, and that's a good question, the first thing we're going to do is begin supporting through materiel and PR endorsement those candidates that we feel and who have openly expressed support for the secular community.
Okay.
I'm speaking of candidates like Kyrsten Sinema, and although no longer a member of the Senate, Pete Stark, when he was in the Senate,
right,
was someone that we would have supported very vocally had he been able to retain his seat.
Right.
That's the first step. The second step, as we mentioned, is running small neighborhood and local candidacy campaigns. And I look to see those beginning sometime later this year.
Okay. Look forward to hearing about it. I do have a bit of a question. And this is one that whenever we talk about the National Atheist Party, because it's been a subject of discussion for us, is, you know, while political parties, especially in other countries, can form over any ideology, and there are religiously affiliated political parties in the other in other countries, that's not something we hear, you know, that we see here in the United States very often. And the idea of a political party with a religious affiliation, even if it's not actually affiliation with a religion, you know, an atheist party, tends to leave a bad taste in people's mouths. How have you encountered that, and how do you hope to counter that when you approach it?
You know, I haven't encountered as much of that as I thought I was going to.
Really?
Really. I would say that's one of the really more rare criticisms and pushbacks that we receive and I receive. Because if you go to Wikipedia and you look at minor parties in the United States, you're going to see a good dozen of them with Christian in the name.
Absolutely.
I think there's over 200 minor parties and third parties in the United States right now, and many of them, if not most, are religious aligned and religiously identified. So really having a party that's openly not religiously aligned isn't really that surprising to me. Although when you look at the overview at the top level parties, it would seem to be odd. When you look from the other end of the telescope, it's not.
Right.
I have a question. At the top of the interview, you mentioned being inspired by something Richard Dawkins said about there not being a movement like this in America. I'm curious, are there movements like this in other political formats around the world that perhaps you're being inspired by?
Well, no. I'm not being inspired by them, but they have contacted us since our founding, and we've developed great relationships with them. There's a secular party in Australia, for instance. Mm. There's one in Belgium, and we've had a lot of support from Sweden.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
Sweden is very heavy in the atheism.
I've been on Swedish television, as a matter of fact, and I've been interviewed several times by Swedish radio, and they're wonderful people, and I really enjoyed meeting them and talking with them about secularism in the United States. They are very surprised as a nation that such an advanced economy and such an advanced nation as the United States can be so mired in sectarian religious conflict.
So, yeah, absolutely. That's actually something we hear a lot from people who contact Ask an Atheist, is they find it strange, the sort of religious culture that we exist in. So I would be remiss if I didn't bring this up, and I brought it up in your introduction, is that when you're not at the head of a very new political party, you're a comic book artist.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, and it just so happens that we have Mike here, who's just a little bit of a comic book fan.
Yes, I actually saw you worked for Image and Caliber, and I was actually pretty impressed by the work that I saw, so good job.
Well, thank you very much.
So has there been any sort of combination of the two things? Have you thought about doing, like, I don't know, comic book cover art for the National Atheist Party or anything like that?
Well, it's interesting. they're very separate careers.
Yeah.
I have found in the comic book world for the last 20 years or so that many of the fans of comic book art and comic books are atheists, and a lot of my discussions at conventions when I'd go and sit in artist alley and, you know, draw pictures for people for $10 or $20 or whatever, we would get into these, you know, discussions. So it's really been kind of a no-brainer, sort of a mixture.
That's very cool. So I know I said this before, but if people would like to contact the National Atheist Party and participate or see what you guys are up to, where would you like them to go?
Well, there are two main places. The first is our standalone website, www.usanap.org. And secondly, you can contact us on Facebook at national.atheist.party.
All right. Troy Boyle is the president of the National Atheist Party and, again, also a comic book artist, and he's presently studying law. So thank you very much. I look forward to hear from – why don't you give us a call when you've got some candidates on, and we'll talk to you again.
I will do so.
All right. Thank you very much. This is Ask an Atheist.
Thanks for having me on.
No problem. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And we got some news when we come back in a moment.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
All right, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules, a variation on our usual fantasy campaign system. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shapeshifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, as well as a listing of other products and to get involved in the community forums.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back! This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Now, now that the interview is over, I think we do need to talk about it a little bit. We weren't... I gotta come right out and say it, that we were a little... We actually sat on this interview for a while because we didn't know what we were going to do about it, partially because of our political, you know, our political thing. We try to stay away from politics, but also partially we were a little concerned. A National Atheist Party bothered us a little bit, and we weren't certain about it. So we wanted to be very careful how we approached this interview.
Well, I kind of came to it. I did not have very high expectations for how this would go.
Yeah.
I didn't know as much in terms of what the metrics were they had for success, if they had any plans for ballot access, if there was any plans for fundraising.
Yeah.
And I was actually very impressed.
Here's the thing. Yeah.
He actually has a good head on his shoulders about this. And I think that when you are a third-party activist, you kind of have two different modes on it, which you're always thinking in the long term, for one. You never come at it like you're going to win the presidency next year.
Yeah.
You basically look at it in terms of long-term growth, and he seems to have an understanding of a long-term plan rather than, hey, we're going to be president next year. Because I've seen third parties form where activists start talking like that right away, and I just want to slap them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're just like, oh, your heart's going to be broken.
And that was, yeah, that was the thing, is I didn't come into this with big expectations, but it took him roughly 8 seconds to completely exceed those and then establish. I mean, this was a, I was, I, you know, we were talking about this in the break, and I felt like we had to share this. I was really impressed, and I look forward to seeing what the National Atheist Party does, and I think they're worthy of support. I do.
Yeah, I'd like to see what they throw together.
Yeah.
At the very least, his first time interview with him, I was happy with what I heard. I'd love to see more.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's really what you get with anything is any kind of debate, any sort of political thing like this. He managed to get his foot in the door.
Yeah.
And I am interested in
perhaps. And you had some very clear metrics about what, you know, when, especially when we were talking about ballot access and candidates.
Yeah.
And we were afraid that there was going to be a little bit of some veering on there. There was none. Straight answers, head on, knew what was going on.
Well, when you're a third-party activist, ballot access for any campaign is the only way. If you're not on the ballot, you're not a choice.
Yeah.
People can't vote for you if you're not on that piece of paper. Or yeah. That screen nowadays.
Yeah.
And if you're not there, if you don't have a plan for that, the conversation is over.
Yeah.
That I'm not interested in getting involved in somebody who's just a write-in everywhere. And the fact is, he has had conversations about this. He's looked at what the measurements are from different states. That right there puts him head and shoulders over some people that I have met in third-party politics.
That's great. That's great. So, as somebody who was participating with the National Atheist Party on Facebook, how did you feel about the interview?
I think that went really well. I learned a lot more about it. I was similarly skeptical, just if not for nothing else, the fact that I don't know much about it.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of people in the Washington chapter, actually, compared to some of the other states.
Yeah, yeah.
Robert Ray, I think we know him, right?
We do.
Yeah. I think he's active in it.
Troy, you really, I don't, you know, we're not gatekeepers of the atheism movement by any means, but I think if you want to know if the National Atheist Party is making inroads to people who might be skeptical of a project, here's an example of that right here. Very good job.
Yep, good job.
So, and thank you, and I really do look forward to hearing sort of the future of the party, and I do look forward to talking about the National Atheist Party again. So, we got some fun emails here. The first one comes to us from Ernesto from Portland. Seriously, guys, stop talking about the Bible if you don't know what you're talking about. I know the standard response from people who don't know the Bible but tried to show its flaws. Why should I care about what the Bible says? I don't believe in it, which is true, but if that's the case, stop talking about it. What you're doing is exactly what Ray Comfort does to the theory of evolution. Makes up a parody of the theory, then attacks the parody. We all know how stupid that is. We know that by doing that, he is admitting he doesn't know what he doesn't believe in. Why do you do the same thing with the scriptures? I like the show, hate your miseducation about the Bible. Until the next time you screw something up, Ernesto.
Oh, thank you, Ernesto.
I do like that closing. Right back at you, buddy.
Yeah. I don't think we do. I'm sorry. This is, when we bring up scripture says what, and we talk about the things that are in the Bible, these are popular interpretations.
Yeah.
These are mainstream interpretations. These are interpretations that held sway for centuries. And the idea of not addressing this book as if it's a book that says that slavery is okay and that talking animals exist, that's a mistake. There is ridiculous stuff in this book. I think it's a good thing that a lot of modern Christians ignore that stuff today. But it's a mistake to pretend that the modern interpretation, oh, well, they just got all this stuff wrong, and it isn't a book about talking animals. No, it still is. People have gotten better. The book has stayed the same.
Right. And that's the argument one. There's a difference between the book and its believers. Argument two, the Bible has been used to justify basically every argument. And this is something that I've seen from even ex-Christians who are now atheists. Is that we get a lot of these emails, and we don't do them because I actually find the argument kind of boring. is when they tell me that their implementation or that, you know, when they tell us that we make errors about biblical implementation, here's what you have wrong, it actually says this. You're just telling me about the implementation and the interpretation that either you grew up with or that you believe is the proper implementation. I guarantee you that you are somewhere in the world in the minority in that implementation or, you know, interpretation. I keep wanting to say implementation because I'm a computer guy. The fact of the matter is, the Bible has been used to justify everything, and every interpretation of the Bible that we have ever discussed on the show has been an interpretation held by at least millions of Christians.
Yeah, and when we talk about every single social upheaval, every single social argument that we've ever had, generally speaking, at the beginning, the Bible's on the wrong side of it. And it takes the majority of Christians a long time to get there. Like on the question of slavery.
Yeah.
Slavery was used to justify, a Bible was used to justify slavery for centuries.
Yeah.
And in fact, you look at the writings of Mark Twain. This is why I think that, honestly, popular culture is so important, and a knowledge of popular culture, because that culture stays alive long after the arguments die. And if you look at something like, say, Mark Twain's The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, there is all of the Christian arguments in favor of slavery all over that book, and that was written within the lifetime of that institution of slavery. Just, you know, I think it's a real mistake to assume that every Christian has been wrong on that issue until Martin Luther King, and then, oh, he's just the one who read it right. And the assumption that every Christian everywhere, including the people who wrote it, because if Martin Luther King had written the Bible, the slavery stuff wouldn't be in there. It's not a question of him writing that and then just, oh, well, that's phrased badly. No, it says that you can own a person as a property. You can beat them to a certain degree as long as you don't knock out eyes or teeth. It just gets it wrong.
I think comparing you guys to Ray Comfort is a real low blow. I mean, he's the guy that makes the argument that God made the banana just for our hands, even though it's been cultivated to be that way over a long, long time.
Well, and then they also, his organization came out with that publishing of The Origin of the Species with certain parts of the book cut out of it. I mean, that's the thing, is when we make fun of a Bible verse or when we do a scripture says what, and I'll admit that. I'll just toe the line on that. We make fun of the Bible. The Bible is, at its face, really silly. We actually give you the quote. We give you the direct quote. We give you the chapter, the verse. We tell you what translation we're looking at, and I'll just go back to what I said before. Every argument or every interpretation of the Bible that we use on the show, it's not an interpretation that we hold because we don't care. It's an interpretation held by other Christians. And I'll go you one further. It's necessary for atheists to talk about the Bible in the United States because we do live in a Christian social substrate. And when people want to argue with atheists and tell us that we're bad and that we're not worthy to be citizens, or we're not actually people and we don't deserve rights, it's never Muslims talking like that. It's never Jews talking like that. In America, it's Christians. So it's necessary for us to have some idea of what's in the book.
Yeah, and it's funny because a lot of Christians don't.
Yeah.
And I find it so, again, everything we talk about, mainstream.
Yeah.
In fact, some of these crazy things that we're talking about wrong are mouthed off by politicians who are very popular and make legislation that is enforced on all of us.
Yeah.
There have been members of the U.S. Congress in committee meetings saying that they don't believe in global warming because God promised he wouldn't drown us again, and here's a rainbow to prove it.
Exactly.
This is something that not only is well organized, but is politically powerful, and in fact has so much in terms of money, supporters, their entire television networks that mouth off stuff that say exactly what we say in scripture says what.
I bet you Ernesto would likes our moment of science, though. Unlike that other guy who likes it when we talk about the Bible and doesn't like moment of science. I don't get it sometimes. If you don't like something that we do on the show, or you like something that we do on the show, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call, 253-584-1480. Or you can go to askanatheist.tv and click on the shiny red button and let us know. So we've got another email. This is a fun one. That's a short one. It's ST from the North. And they write, "What if God, Judeo-Christian, came to you in person?"
Well,
Mike.
He didn't spell Judeo right. It looks like, I mean, Becky's a Spanish teacher, but it says Juedo. Juedo Christian.
I wonder if that's what Becky did.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
But anyways, what if God come to you in person? Well, he'd have to prove that he's God.
Yeah,
that's and not just another. See, the thing, I'm a science fiction fan, I'm a comic book fan. It does not take a lot for me to imagine a really powerful guy who isn't God. Q from Star Trek, Genie from Aladdin, Mr. Yeah. McCs Piddalick.
Right.
Any other super powerful guy, Harry Potter. He can create fire out of thin air. He can cast spells to change his shape. How do I know that he isn't just that? I mean, my basic skepticism says if I'm encounter some sort of person that has these sorts of powers, one, are the powers real? If they prove the powers are real, how do I know that's all powerful?
Yeah.
I think Christian set the bar too low for skepticism on this question.
I address this in the book I'm slowly working on, actually. I just said if somebody came to me and claimed they were God, I would just say, provide me with some of the equations that we haven't figured out yet.
Yeah.
And if they work, I'll entertain the idea. Because obviously everything follows natural law that we can observe so far. So there's stuff we haven't figured out. If he's God, he should be able to tell us, and we can put it to the test.
Yeah, I mean, if there is a Judeo-Christian God and I meet them, my first question is, why are you such a fraud? I mean, why do it this way, or why act this way when you clearly did not create the universe? I mean, that's what it comes down to, is even if there's an entity out there who is way more powerful than I am, and is the person behind the Bible, it still doesn't, it just means that there's somebody claiming to be that entity. It doesn't actually prove anything in the Bible.
That's just the plot to Star Trek 5 again.
Yeah, it's just the plot to Star Trek 5.
Really again. Powerful guy. And that's the thing that I find really interesting about a lot of these emails. If this person proves their power, yeah, there's a really powerful guy. That doesn't make me worship them.
Right.
If this is, in fact, the God of the Bible, that's a character in fiction that I would never worship. I might live in fear of, in the same way I live in fear of Kim Jong-il or Darth Vader. But, I mean, I might, like, in their presence. But I don't love that person.
Yeah.
Love isn't won that way. It's not won through strength of force.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think Christians need to sort of understand that. There's two questions on the table here. Is the character in this book a good thing? Would I want to live under this question? Would I worship this person? And then, is this person true, and are there facts to back up those claims? I'd say no to both.
Yeah. So we have one more email I'd like to do quickly, because I really like where this one goes. And this is Dylan from New York. And he writes, I've been an atheist for most of my life, but only now have I started doing what I describe as widening the lens. My grand question is, have you looked at aspects like of life, like our political structure, culture, economic paradigms, etc., and applied research and skeptic notions to them? If you have your skepticism changed the way you think about issues besides religion? I'm going to go in a specific order, and I'll just say absolutely, and I get in trouble for it, is people, even in the atheism community, when you apply skepticism to stuff outside of religion or outside of scientific skepticism, but you apply the same logical structures, I've gotten into trouble so many times for it. How about you, Casey?
Oh, absolutely. Just in recent years, my idea of culture has changed a lot. Social norms, things like that.
Yeah.
Marriage, things of that nature have really changed in my opinions. And politics too. You know, I used to not have opinions about politics, if you can believe it.
I can. Yeah,
I'd say absolutely. I think that skepticism isn't just a question about certain topics. Skepticism is a mindset you apply to everything.
Yeah,
and it's a simple question. Whether you're talking about an advertisement's claims or a politician's claims, it's, is this true, and does this person have evidence to back up the things they're saying? And of course, you apply that to everyone, and it does change my mind. And sometimes I don't want to apply it. It's sort of there. I try to apply
one
it
of the
everything.
Biggest things when I apply skepticism and scientific inquiry to things which are, you know, to other stuff. When I apply that thinking to other parts of that life, what it can rob me of is sort of certainty. Is as I've become more and more skeptical and more scientifically aware, and I start thinking about these things in sort of the same way. You know, talk about human cultures and, you know, stuff like that. I just become a lot, it makes it very clear to me how little I know about a lot of these subjects I'm supposed to be educated on in order to be a good voter. And I'm just not certain anymore. And there's two ways to address that uncertainty. Is you can just sort of stick your head in the sand and say, I don't know, I don't want to know, I'm staying out of it. And you know what, for some subjects I do that. Or what it does more often is it drives me to research, it drives me to read. And as a result, I think it's made that that application has made me a better person.
I used to not vote because I figured I don't have an educated opinion, so I shouldn't really contribute.
Yeah.
And then I realized that education never really stops. So
it doesn't stop people from getting elected either.
Yeah. So as educated as I am, I'm going to run with it and vote.
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to is, you know, one of the things that's really changing for me is how I view culture and how, especially when I look at history, is how interconnected human cultures and human civilizations have always been. And that's been a surprise to me.
I think, like you said, Sam, that question of losing certainty, there's something scary about not being able to say something for sure offhandedly, but I think that there's something exciting about it, that what you do is try to let go of the fear of admitting you don't know something, and then realizing that it's actually exciting that you get to find out.
Yeah, that's, I mean, isn't uncertainty sort of the basis of discovery and exploration? If you have this book, if you have all of these answers, be they religious or political, you have no reason to search.
Look at all the cool answers we found because we admitted we didn't know and looked.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it comes down to, is that's what I mean by it made me a better person. It certainly made me a more well-informed person. But I think it's actually that uncertainty has actually, and this is in spite of what Christians will tell you, it's made me a happier person because it's given me those moments of discovery where I step back and I go, that's how it works? That's cool. And that, you know, and it just drives me even further. And at this point, I've got so many interest, you know, I've read on so much stuff, and I've learned so many cool facts about so many things that I don't even know what direction to go in anymore. I want to go back to school. I don't want to be an IT dork my entire life. I'd like to do something else, but I haven't the foggiest thing about what direction to go in because stuff is so cool. There's so many directions you can go in.
And it's that opening of options that is exciting. Rather than closing yourself off and living in a small world where you know everything and all the answers have been dealt with, isn't it a lot cooler to go, man, the possibilities are endless?
And that's all the time we got for today. My name is Sam. With me was Mike Gillis and Casey Rochford, as usual. Our music is by Chris Coleman. Ask an Atheist is an NEDM Media production. You give us a call at 206-420-0997. I would like to thank Troy Boyle. Again, thank you for the interview of the National Atheist Party. See you guys. Oh, yeah, we're at 11:11. See you next week.
Clay Radio, your conversation station. KLAY Lakewood, Tacoma, on 1180 AM.